69. We're so fine. Oh my God. I'll say that again because I have no.
My wife.
Yeah. Oh no. I was not expecting that. This is episode 69 of Ethically Ambiguous, and today I'm going to be talking about Kareem Abdul-Jabbar and why y'all need to know more about him if you don't already.
Oh, it's a great.
Yeah, he's a great man.
I said it's a great for some reason. yes, and I'm going to talk more information on sanctions in Iran and, yeah, more evil the Trump administration is doing to that country.
Yeah.
So stay tuned.
And then we read some reviews, and it's a fun time.
And you're going to hear me sniffing a lot because I'm getting sick. Suckas.
Send good vibes.
Who are we? Where did we come from? Who do we become? What is it to be? What to be is it? Where are we? Who are my parents? Where are my pants? Why were we born? We are Ethnically Ambiguous.
Guess what episode it is?
It's 70?
69! 69. Feeling fine. What a time! Not a complete rhyme, but you get the gist.
What a time, not a complete rhyme.
Yeah, exactly.
Genius.
Yeah, I am a genius. Thank you so much. This is episode 69.
You're a genius. Is that a thing?
I don't know. Wait, what are you trying to make it mean?
Like you're like a gene? Like your DNA?
I don't think it's a thing. But I do want to give a special shout out to our guest last week, Lloyd, who really wanted to be the guest for episode 69 because he is Lloyd. But here we are at episode 69, just the two of us.
Look, so genus is a principal taxonomic category that ranks above species and below family and is denoted by a capital. Okay, you know what? That's not what you want. No big deal. Can we cut that?
How was your week?
I think I'm getting sick, but other than
that,
I don't know. This has been a very slow week for me. I can't really remember yesterday or the day before. I'm like really, you know, it's like that day
it's
where
it's a weird week for me too. I don't know what it is about the, maybe with daylight savings time.
Oh, you're right. That was last week?
That was Sunday.
Do you get that feeling where you think every day's Friday? I've been having that a lot this week.
Yeah. That's really accurate, I would say. I don't know what that is.
It probably is daylight savings, right? Yeah. It's getting so...
But it's only an hour, like, right? Like, why would that mess us up so bad?
Because it's getting dark.
Yeah. It gets dark at, like, 5 p.m. It's stupid.
So now I can't go on my hike. Well, we can't do our hikes anymore because we can't hike in that area because of the coyotes.
But also the fires are really bad over there, too.
Yeah, we really just shouldn't be hanging out over there. But
also, FYI, if you guys are near the SoCal or NorCal fires, the air is very bad. It's not just debris that's getting burned. It's also nuclear waste. So please wear a face mask for your own safety and the safety of others. Just be safe out there.
You just shouldn't inhale smoke air, right?
We thought LA fucking air quality was good enough, but was bad enough. I mean, and now we have this to add to it.
Sorry, I'm like keep sniffing. Okay, no, I was going to tell you though. So I've picked up a craft habit. Well, I've already had it. I've always had a craft habit, but now it's like in full swing. Why did I say it that way? But because we can't go hiking because it's getting so dark at night. On the trail, we can, you know, whatever. But so we've started just like walking to a Michael's from my friend's place because it's like conveniently like a mile and a half away. So it's like back, mile and a half there, mile and a half back. It's basically like 3 miles, which is how much our hike was.
Yeah.
So, but then we just go to the Michael's and then just buy a bunch of crafts. And then we're just like, okay.
That's fun.
So now, you know, I'm very into macrame. I'm really into cross stitch.
You're pretty
right
good.
Now.
You showed me a picture yesterday. The macrame that you made is pretty on point. I could see that at Urban Outfitters.
That's funny because there is one there that I was very upset about because I was like, this is so goddamn nice.
I would have thought it was fucked up. It was bought.
Well, if you saw it in person, you'd be like, okay, yeah, this was homemade. Photos obviously make things look better than they really are.
Except for me.
I keep portrait moding all my macrames. Everyone's like, wow.
That's what portrait mode is made for. Yeah. Your macrames.
But no, that's the second time around. The first time I fucked it up.
Well, you showed me. You showed me the before and after, and you've improved dramatically.
It's just so hard.
But it's really good. That means it's cool to see yourself improve physically at something. You know what I mean?
That's true.
It's cool.
So now my next step is cross-stitching.
Mm-hmm.
I have no idea what I'm going to cross-stitch. I should look into that. And then I got some... So, okay. So Sorry, guys. I'm drinking a Diet Coke. It's not good for the burps.
Is that keto friendly?
Yeah. Well, technically, you're not supposed to drink like natural flavored or not. Excuse me, artificial flavored stuff. But I don't give a fuck. I'm one of those keto girls that does. This is not a bit I really want to lean into. Wait, hold on.
Abandoned it immediately.
Yeah. No, I was like, this is not who I am. So there's like these. So I don't know if you ever looked up macrame on Pinterest. Don't recommend it. It's horribly intimidating. The thing is, like, I don't have Pinterest. I don't know why I was on there. But like, there's all these like circle macrames. So I bought two rings at Michael's, and we're gonna goddamn see how it goes.
Like, it looks like a dream catcher.
Yeah. It's got like dream catcher vibes.
That's a cool hobby, man.
Yeah. Thing is, like. I mean, there's other ones that, you know, like, there's, it's a whole thing. Anyway, I'm trying to like, do a thing.
I don't know if it's called cross-stitching or not, but when I was in college, I made a lot of bracelets and stuff, like, by, like, knotting and stuff like that.
Right, so that's the same thing. Yeah. It's just, like, you just use thicker, bigger rope.
Yeah.
And not...
yeah.
Just teeny tiny. Yeah. No, it's all the same sort of, like, knot stuff that you
it
just...
It is pretty fun.
Yeah. There is some, like...
It's like therapeutic.
Yeah.
It's like meditative in a way.
So maybe I'll make something like that. Guys, Google circle macrame or something like that, and you'll just see all the things I will attempt to make and probably not do well. Maybe I'll start selling on my Etsy page.
That'll be fun.
Are you into any crafts lately?
Crafts.
Tell me about your crafts.
Not lately. I used to be, I'm still into like art and stuff, and there's an art piece that I'm trying to make right now, but it involves like melting plastic, so I need to do it safely.
That's crafty.
Yeah, I need to find like a
mixed
kiln.
Media?
Yeah, like mixed media is my thing. A lot of found objects and stuff, but
you need to find a kiln.
Yeah, I need something to safely be like in the open air and melt plastic and not be inhaling those toxic fumes.
Can you do it with it's like a window open? Over your stove.
No, I was told by multiple people not to do that, even though I wanted to.
I'm sorry, that sounds really dangerous.
Yeah, it does.
As soon as I said it out loud, I was like, why are you recommending it? Here, I have something for you to do. Just start melting plastic over yourself, but just like open a window, it's fine.
My week was interesting as well. It was weird. If you're listening to this on a Monday, maybe you already know that I was a guest on Culture Kings a couple days ago on Friday. So if you want to listen to me and Edgar from Culture Kings talk it out, go. It's on the House of First Network, our sister podcast, or brother podcast, I should say. And it's
fun.
I think
it's okay to call them sisters.
Okay.
We're the brothers.
Yeah, okay.
We're the brothers.
Sibling podcasts. It was fun. We talked about my filmmaking and my poetry, and I obviously vented about Lena Dunham a little bit because that's my brand right now. And it was fun. Yeah, he's a great interviewer. He's really fun to talk to. And his voice is so soothing. It's like
very deep
and like melodic.
It really like resonates.
Yeah, and he's doing this thing recently where he's trying to be like an NPR, like I don't know, like a...
He's at like an interviewer.
Yeah.
Like, he's talking in vocal form.
Yeah, yeah.
Now joining
me today
is Syrian
filmmaker Shireen Unis. Yeah, I was into it. So
she found her touch. In filmmaking.
You should listen to it, obviously, but he started off being like, if you're in an airplane.
No.
It was funny. So you should listen to it. It was a fun time. And
So like culture, NPR kings?
Yeah. I called him the podcast king. And I think he liked that. I do, there was a tweet that I brought up the tweet to him.
Oh,
that's one of our very loyal, amazing fans tweeted at us being Stuff You Should Know and Ethnically Ambig are the best
shows
on the Stuff Network, like Fight Me.
Which low key I was like, I don't know about that.
I love y'all. I love you, whoever you are out there for thinking that. But then out of nowhere, a Culture Kings fan, how did you even find that tweet? Why is he snooping on our likes and our retweets? He said Culture Kings is greater than Ethnically Ambig, and I did not have it. I gave Edgar some shit. And Edgar admitted that their fans should not be snooping around. Let our fans like us.
Mm. I think it's funny. What if I was one who's out there like trying to fight her? Like, well, you know what? The thing you need to understand is... I'm like just hating on her.
Actually, this is actually better than
us. Actually, I don't know if you've heard Part-Time Genius. I actually like don't even listen to anything on our network anymore. No.
What are podcasts?
You don't really listen to podcasts.
Don't tell anyone that.
There's nothing wrong with that. You just
I'm
don't.
A fraud.
You listen to music? I don't know what you listen to. What do you do when you're driving?
I listen to music.
Okay, so there you go.
Yeah, a lot of Kendrick, a lot of like, I don't know, good music.
Yeah, so you listen.
But
some people that don't listen, that's like what they, it's weird.
I listened to Serial back in the day because everyone was talking about it, and I just wanted to know what everyone was fucking talking about. Mm. I didn't, like, I wasn't obsessed with it like everyone else was, because I was kind of annoyed with her style. It seemed very...
it's very mimicable.
Deceiving or, like, misleading.
You're not supposed to fall in love with the guy that you're trying to figure out is innocent or not.
No, not her style. Like,
that's what I mean. Like, she felt like she was, like, falling in love with him.
Oh, yeah, exactly, exactly.
You're like, okay, this is starting to get weird.
So, I didn't really like it. So that maybe that turned me off of podcasts. But I think podcasts are great. We have a podcast that you should listen to. I'm just a fraud.
Are you talking about this podcast?
Yeah.
I literally was going to be like, what podcast? I just got to say, you got me there. I was, this podcast.
This
I'm an idiot.
Podcast.
Nice.
Nice.
Yeah, that was my whole thing with Serial.
I don't know. I just didn't like her approach. It was strange.
God, she's such a weirdo.
Yeah.
She was very parodable.
Yeah, exactly.
Is that a word?
She was easily parodied.
There you go. Parodable. You know the classic word, parodable. Okay, well. Yeah. What's your heart say for this today's episode?
My dad, we moved around a lot in Southern California, but it was mostly in Orange County and LA. And so my dad, we grew up a lot in San Diego eventually, but my dad got a very strong attachment to the LA Lakers. So growing up, I just remember watching a lot of LA Laker games. My dad's a huge LA Laker fan through and through till death. And
can I just say it's so funny to me that you're so unfamiliar with basketball that you just call them LA Lakers no matter what, like every time you just say LA Lakers.
Okay, fine, I'll just say Lakers. Sports. I love sports. Can't you tell how much I love sports?
Just, I don't, because I'm so, because my boyfriend's a huge Laker fan, so I never hear just like LA Lakers, like to be like, it's they're in LA. That's just funny to me.
Okay, word.
Yeah.
It's obvious how much I love sports. But regardless.
I'm the same way.
Yeah.
I would be like, the sports basket. They shoot it in the sports basket.
But I grew up with a lot of Laker games in the background. And I want to talk about one player that both my parents are obsessed with. I'm kind of obsessed with because he's a badass. And also, he doesn't get enough attention, in my opinion. I know basketball players and fans appreciate him. But if you guys don't know about him, I want to talk about Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. And I particularly want to talk about him because last night at AFI, I saw a film called Jin. And it was about a African-American woman who has a daughter, and she ends up converting to Islam and like as a like mid-life person. And it reminded me how big the African-American Muslim community is and how overlooked they are sometimes. Because that was, I mean, Malcolm X and Muhammad Ali. And like there's a very huge sect of African-Americans who are Muslim. And I want to talk about that because it was an interesting movie. It was made by a woman who was black and Muslim, and she was raised in the Bay Area in a large community just like that. And it reminded me of Kareem Abdul-Jabbar and how he also converted.
What's her name?
The filmmaker. I feel like I'm going to say it wrong, so stand by. But it was an interesting movie, and the acting in it was really good. The actors are...
It's fictional.
It's a fiction movie, but it's based on her like experiences. Her name is Neelja Moomin.
Okay.
I'm saying that wrong. I'm sorry.
I was just curious if I'd heard it.
But the reason why I wanted to see it was largely based on the title Jinn, because I'm obsessed with jinn. If you guys don't know, in the Quran, jinn are these like so angels are three beings that God made. As you learn as a child, being a Muslim, there's the humans who are made of clay, and then there's the angels who are made of light and have no free will. They obey God's orders, and then humans have free will and made of clay, and then jinn are beings that are made out of fire. And
so the fourth being?
The fourth. Oh, wait, what's the third? Oh, is this, or is it just straight? I thought it was a third being.
The third being.
Third being, yeah. So it's humans, angels, and then jinn. Got it. If I'm wrong, correct me, sure. But come at me. I don't give a shit. But jinn are made from fire, and they also have free will. And it's said, and I was taught that they live in a different dimension just like us, and we can't see them, but they can see us. And so I was very,
they're like on your. This is not literal, but like they're the thing that it's how what my mom always said. They're like on your shoulder, whispering in your ear to do evil things. Like you can't see them, but they're there.
Yeah,
it's like that. The concept, like the trope in movies, where it's like angel and devil on your shoulders.
They were never in Arab culture. I don't think they're taught. They're explained in that way.
Yeah,
they're more just like they can take the shape of humans. Uh-huh. They're described as really creepy, like. Literally, they can be in this room and watching us, but we can't see them. Like, they have their own dimension, their own life. And so I was raised, like, being really creeped out by them, but also fascinated by them. Uh-huh. So that's why I was pulled to this movie, but I just wanted to give that a little tangent.
But our Halloween episode, like, last year.
Yeah.
We talk a lot about it.
Yeah. Yeah, that was, we did. Like, we talked about supernatural beings. Yeah. Wow, we've been around for a while, guys. But yeah, look up Jin. Maybe I'll talk about them more in a later episode. But for the purpose of this one, I want to talk about Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. So he's 71 years old right now. He's 7'2". He's a giant. Mm. And his name means he converted in 1970. Wait, did I say that right? Am I saying that because he's 71 years old? I'm going to get into his history in a second. But his name, literally, it translates from Arabic. It means the noble one serving the Almighty. He was born Ferdinand Lewis Alsidnor Jr. He's currently a retired basketball player. He played 20 seasons in the NBA for the Milwaukee Bucks and the Lakers. And as a center, he was a record six-time NBA MVP. A 19 NBA All-Star, a 15-time NBA All-Star selection, and 11-time NBA All-Defensive Team member. And his credits go on and on and on. Like, he's a badass. He won 71 consecutive basketball games on his high school team in New York City, and then he was recruited by UCLA. And after spending six seasons in Milwaukee, and he led the Bucks to their first NBA championship when he was only 24 in 1971, he was 71. He took on the Muslim name of Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. And so he has a very signature skyhook shot, and he established himself as like one of the league's top scorers. And then in 75, he went to the Lakers, and he played the last 14 seasons of his career there and won five additional championships. And
with that hook shot.
Yeah, his skyhook. And his contributions were a key component to the quote-unquote Showtime era of Lakers basketball. It was like when Shaq was there and Kobe was there and Michael Jordan was at the Bulls at the time or whatever. So Shofi's looking at me like, sports.
Well, this is like the greatest show for our engineer and our producer because they're huge Lakers fans.
I want to like talk about his achievements, but the bulk of this is about his personal life. After he retired in 89, he was the NBA's all-time leader in points scored, which is almost 39,000, and all-time leader in points scored and career wins. He still holds those titles. And in 2007, ESPN voted him the greatest center of all time. And in 2008, they named him the greatest player in college basketball history. And in 2016, they named him the second best player in NBA behind Michael Jordan. He's also an actor, a basketball coach, and a best-selling author. And in 2012, he was selected by Hillary Clinton, who was the Secretary of State at the time, to be the U.S. Global Cultural Ambassador. And in 2016, Barack Obama awarded him the Presidential Medal of Freedom right before he left office. There's a really adorable picture on Wikipedia of Hillary Clinton and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar in what I'm assuming is some type of White House or like a political place, but she's so tiny compared to him and holding up his jersey. It's adorable. She's like presenting him with this honor, and he's just like a giant. It's really cute. But
it's a really funny photo.
Yeah, it's really, really funny.
It's almost as if you could cut his head off in the photo. Yeah. Like, 'cause he's
and she's so happy, just like it's really smiley. So in 2012, Clinton announced that Abdul-Jabbar had accepted position as a cultural ambassador for the U.S. And during this announcement, he commented on the historical legacy of African Americans as representative of the U.S. culture. He said, "I remember when Louis Armstrong did it for President Kennedy, one of my heroes, so it's nice being following in his footsteps." And he went to Brazil as part of this role to promote education for local youths. And so now I want to talk about his conversion to Islam and the 1968 Olympic boycott that he took a part of. So in the summer of 1968, he was still, he hasn't converted yet, so his name was Elsindor. He took the Shahada twice. And the Shahada is this phrase you say in front of a imam, like a Muslim cleric. And you say a phrase and you pray and it's called the Shahada, you become a Muslim. So then he converted to Sunni Islam, and though he didn't, but he didn't begin using his public name, his Arabic name publicly until 71. He boycotted the 1968 Summer Olympics by deciding not to try out for the U.S. men's Olympic basketball team. It was in protest to the unequal treatment of African Americans in the U.S. But yeah, so it reminded me of, Kaepernick and how he's protesting because of African Americans, how they're treated. So I think it's interesting to see this history of, athletes take stands in the only way they know how.
Oh, and like, this is actually back in the current zeitgeist, not the daily one, Jay-Z was Tommy Smith for Halloween, and Tommy Smith was the runner, sprinter, I forget exactly what sort of running he did. That's weird that I have to, like, explain. I don't know. But he was one of the people who did the fist.
Yeah,
in the air when he won a gold medal, and that was considered a huge thing. Yeah, because they were like "Whoa, Panther, we don't do political acts at the Olympics," and so that was
simply him just being proud.
Yeah,
and yeah, that's crazy. But Kareem Abdul-Jabbar has also been a regular contributor to discussions on race and religion, among other topics. He has written a regular column for Time magazine, and has appeared on Meet the Press. He pointed out that Islam should not be blamed for violent acts of extremists, just as Christianity has not been blamed for the actions of violent extremists who profess Christianity. When asked about being Muslim, he said, "I don't have any misgiving about my faith. I am very concerned about the people who claim to be Muslims that are murdering people and creating all this mayhem in the world. That is not what Islam is about, and it's that should not be what people think when they think about Muslims. But it's up to all of us to do something about it." And I want to use the majority of the rest of my time to quote this article he wrote for Al Jazeera, actually.
Oh, nice.
It's literally titled, "Why I'm Converted to Islam." And
that's great.
He wrote it in March 29th, 2015. And the tagline, or the subtitle is, "It's not easy being Muslim in America, but my choice was a spiritual transformation." He says, "I was born Lou Elsindor. I am now Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. The transition from Lou to Kareem was not merely a change in celebrity brand name, like Sean Combs to Puff Daddy or Diddy to P. Diddy, but a transformation of heart, mind, and soul. I used to be Lou Elsindor, the pale reflection of what white America expected of me. Now I'm Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, the manifestation of my African history, culture, and beliefs. Even though I became Muslim over 40 years ago, I'm still defending that choice. I was introduced to Islam while a freshman at UCLA, and although I achieved a certain degree of national fame as a basketball player, I tried to keep my personal life private. Celebrity made me nervous and uncomfortable. Part of my restraint was feeling that the person the public was celebrating was not actually the real me. Not only did I have the usual teenage angst of becoming a man, but I was also playing for one of the best college basketball teams in the country, trying to maintain my studies. All of that added to the weight of being black in America in 66 and 67, when James Meredith was ambushed while marching through Mississippi, the Black Panther Party was founded. And then this was also the time where Thurgood Marshall was appointed as the first African-American Supreme Court justice, and a race riot in Detroit left 43 dead and over 1,000 injured. So after all this, he came to realize that Lou Elsindor, the Lou that everyone was cheering on wasn't really the person they imagined. They wanted me to be the clean-cut example of racial equality, the poster boy for how anybody from any background, regardless of race, religion, or economic standing, could achieve the American dream. To them, I was living proof that racism was a myth. I knew better. Being 7'2" and athletic got me here, not a level playing field of equal opportunity. But I was also fighting a strict upbringing of trying to please those in authority. My father was a cop with a strict set of rules. I attended a Catholic school with priests and nuns with also more rules. And I played basketball with coaches who had even more rules. Rebellion was not an option. But I was discontented. I grew up in the 1960s and I wasn't exposed to any black role models. Many black role models. I admired Martin Luther King for his selfless courage and Shaft for kicking ass and getting the girl. Otherwise, the white public's consensus seemed to be that blacks weren't much good. They were either needy, downtrodden folks who required white people's help to get the rice they were due, or racial troublemaker, radical troublemakers wanting to take away from whites, white homes and jobs and daughters. The good ones, quote-unquote, were happy entertainers, either in show business or sports, and were expected to show gratitude for their good fortune. I knew this reality was somehow wrong, and it had to change. I just didn't know what it meant for me. And so then, he said, much of my early awakening came from reading the autobiography of Malcolm X as a freshman. I was riveted by his story and how he became to realize that he was the victim of institutional racism that had long imprisoned him before he even landed in actual prison. That's exactly how I felt, imprisoned by an image of who I was supposed to be. The first thing he did was push aside the Baptist religion that his parents had brought him up in and study Islam. To him, Christianity was the foundation of white culture responsible for enslaving blacks and supporting the racism that permeated society. Why can I read? His family was attacked by Christian. His family was attacked by the Christian spouting Ku Klux Klan, and his home was burned by the KKK splinter group, the Black Legion. Malcolm X's transformation from petty criminal to political leader inspired me to look more closely at my upbringing and forced me to think more deeply about my identity. Islam helped him find his true self and gave him the strength not only to face hostility from both blacks and whites, but also to fight for social justice. I began to study the Quran. And he says that this decision set him on an irreversible course of spiritual fulfillment, but it wasn't really a smooth course. And as Malcolm X said, a man is entitled to make a fool of himself if he's ready to pay the cost. And Jabbar says, I paid the cost. And he goes on to say how he originally was brought up by a teacher named Hamas Abdul Khalis, who was the person that actually gave him his Arabic name. But he then... because Kareem Abdul-Jabbar was only 24 when he converted, the question he's often asked, he's saying, he eventually separated from Hamas because he disagreed with some of his teachings, but that did not deter him from being a Muslim. The question he's often asked, he's saying, is why I had to pick a religion so foreign to American culture and a name that was so hard for people to pronounce. Some fans took it very personally, as if I had firebombed their church while tearing up an American flag. Actually, I was rejecting the religion that was foreign to my American culture and embracing one that was part of my Black African heritage. An estimated 15-30% of slaves brought from Africa were Muslims. Fans thought I joined the Nation of Islam, an American Islamic movement founded in Detroit in 1930, and although I was greatly influenced by Malcolm X, the leader of the Nation of Islam, I chose not to join because I wanted to focus more on the spiritual rather than the political aspects. Eventually, Malcolm rejected the group right before three of its members assassinated him. And, he goes on to talk about how his parents weren't pleased with his conversion and it was not a smooth road and whatever, but that was really the bulk of what I wanted to say. And when I want to just cap it off right after this quick commercial break. And we're back. This entire article that he wrote for Al Jazeera it's more like a think piece, I guess. I don't know if it's an article or not. But
An essay.
He wrote an essay for Al Jazeera in 2015, and I really recommend you read the whole thing. I've only been reading excerpts, and I want to finish it off by his last excerpt. Am I saying that right?
Excerpt,
yeah. I never trust myself.
Excerpt, yeah. If you say it enough, then it sounds foreign.
Yeah. So I want to just finish it off with the end of this, because he's just an amazing writer. He's an amazing person, and I really admire him for his career and his life and just the person he is. He's just the best example of what a man is. So the end of this essay says, "Some fans still call me Lou, and then they seem annoyed when I ignore them. They don't understand that their lack of respect for my spiritual choice is insulting. It's as if they see me as a toy action figure existing solely to decorate their world as they see fit, rather than an individual with his own life. Kermit the Frog famously complained, it's not easy being green. Try being Muslim in America. According to a Pew Research Center poll, I know, I love that, on attitudes about major religious groups, the U.S. public has the least regard for Muslims, slightly less than it has for atheists, even though Islam is the third largest faith in America. The acts of aggression, terrorism, and inhumanity committed by those claiming to be Muslims have made the rest of the world afraid of us. Without really knowing the peaceful practices of most of the world's 1.6 billion Muslims, they see only the worst examples. Part of my conversion to Islam is accepting the responsibility to teach others about my religion, not to convert them, but to coexist with them through mutual respect, support, and peace. One world does not have to mean one religion, just one belief in living peace. No, I said that wrong. One world does not have to mean one religion, just one belief in living in peace.
What did you say before?
I missed an in.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, that's the end of that, and I hope you appreciate him as much as I do. He's just truly a great man, and I'm glad he's around, and I hope he stays around for a long time.
I think he will. How old do you say he was?
71. Wow. Yeah. I was in San Diego for a day a couple days ago, and he was on some, not The View, but like something like The View, the one where Sharon...
The Talk.
Yeah.
I know all daytime talk shows.
Sharon Osbourne, that's her name. She's so adorable, I love her. But he did his like signature hook, sky hook shot with them. It was so strange. They were all trying, and he was just like towering over them, just like helping them. It was funny.
Isn't Sharon Osbourne small?
She's very small.
Up to his knees?
Yeah, yeah.
That's wild.
Yeah. So yeah, that's my piece. Hope you enjoyed it. Bam.
I feel like he's had a very healthy, I don't know, because have you heard the thing where like taller people live shorter lives because they have like more chance of getting sick? Is that just something my father told me?
I've never heard that.
Something about how like their organs have to stretch or something. I don't know. Don't quote me if you're a doctor. Feel free to just tweet at us why maybe that might be right.
Yeah.
But yeah. So I think he's doing well for being like 1,000 feet tall.
He's had leukemia for like...
Oh, yeah.
He has leukemia?
He had leukemia, and he has since been cancer-free, he says.
Okay.
But it's like he's a recovering cancer survivor.
Ah.
Yeah.
Okay, Zach says it's because their body is too big for their joints. Because they're blazing. Just okay, I'm sorry.
No, but he's a big proponent of medical marijuana because it helped him with his cancer recovery.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
I do have something to tell you. So, you know, on top of being, you know, a critic of the treatment of African Americans in the country, he was a critic of the Bachelor Bachelorette series for never having a black human being on the show. As for Bachelor, Bachelorette. I mean, they have them as contestants. Sorry, not like they don't, it's all white people. But they, for the most part, the treatment.
You know, I'm with him.
Yes.
I'm with Kareem.
So when they had the first black Bachelorette, Rachel Lindsay, he came on and did a basketball thing, like date for the guys. So he like had them all like play basketball and like coach them. And all these dudes were like losing their minds. He's like, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar? And like the way she introduces him, like Rachel Lindsay, the Bachelorette, was like, hey guys, we're going to be joined by my friend, Kareem Abdul Jabbar, and everyone's like, what the fuck, like your friend? Because they always do that where they're like, hey guys, I just want to introduce you to a friend of mine.
Yeah,
like,
very casual,
sure,
here,
honey.
Yeah,
but I thought that was very kind of amazing, like the second they like finally broke that like bullshit boundary.
Yeah.
Like he came through. It was just like, see, like
he wasn't like still like salty about it. He was like
wow, see, you did something and now I'm here, like you can actually like make this shit happen and like people will dig it, you know?
I like that.
So
he's, he's amazing.
He's great. I just thought that was funny. You should watch the clip because all
should.
The dudes are all like, what the fuck? They're like, now I have to play basketball in front of him? Like, I'm horrible. Like, all the white guys were like, oh, boy. Because he's like, all right, dude, let's do like teams against each other. Anyway.
Oh, I'm going to watch that.
It's actually really funny. There's a lot of drama in that episode.
Oh.
You know how much
I probably
won't
watch
drama.
The episode,
yeah,
but
don't.
I will just watch the clip.
Just watch the date. It's funny.
Okay.
Yeah, that's cool. I'm glad you did. Did him.
Yeah.
He was on The Talk. That's so funny.
Yeah.
Do you think he'll do this show?
I would love that.
What about
who knows?
So absurd.
Sophie's met him a couple times. Can you hook us up?
I'm sure we
She's
could
shrugging.
Easily.
I'm putting too much pressure.
What if I just Google Kareem Abdul-Jabbar contact info?
What if we just tweet at him aggressively? We should just do that. Twitter has worked for a lot of people, you know?
Actually, you can just go to his website and submit a contact list.
Let's
thing.
Do it.
Oh my god, he has a Skyhook Foundation.
Yeah.
What does that foundation do?
It helps I think like low income youth.
Oh, whoa.
And stuff.
That's cool.
But I'm saying like he's an activist and humanitarian, and he cares about the world like very deeply. And
that's cool. Desku. Yeah. All right. Well, I'm gonna send. I'm gonna do a contact for. Hey, Kareem. It's Anna and Shireen.
Hey, Kareem. It's Anna and Shireen. It's just casual.
Like, it's just like, okay. All right. So for my topic, I am going to. Sorry, I have way too many tabs open. I'm in like that state of mind right now. Okay. I am going to talk about more information on sanctions in Iran. And our former guest, Nilu Tabrizi of the New York Times, wrote this really great article about how medicine is basically a lot harder to get now thanks to sanctions by the U.S. on Iran. So, yeah. I'm going to kind of quote from her article a little and then, you know, talk about other things that are also having sanction issue. Basically, Iran is on a... It's on an economic spiral thanks to sanctions by the U.S. So, like, there's a lot of anxiety right now over medicine ever since Trump withdrew from the nuclear deal. Also, there's, like, really bad banking restrictions. The rial has dropped really hard. And there's also, like, secondary sanctions on, like, from companies that did business with Iran. And because of these sanctions, they've kind of made it nearly impossible for foreign pharmaceutical companies to, like, keep bringing medicine into the country. Like, importing? Yeah, importing is bringing in. I'm an idiot. So, but the Trump officials say that sanctions will not affect humanitarian items, which is just straight up a lie.
Yeah, what the hell? That's like, all it's affecting.
Yeah, exactly. So, Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, he tweeted, shame on hashtag fake news week for helping at Jay Zarif, who's the foreign minister, Javad Zarif, spread lies. The truth is the U.S. does not and never did sanction food and medicine. They are exempt from sanctions, as are financial transactions related to humanitarian needs. Okay, so fake news on him. Mm-hmm. According to Reuters, Trump's moves, they're his sanctions, they target Iran's main source of revenue, its oil exports, as well as its financial sector, which essentially making 50 Iranian banks and their subsidiaries off limits to foreign banks on pain of losing access to the U.S. financial system. So all these different places, they're so scared of like these U.S. sanctions that they're basically they don't want to risk anything. Mm-hmm. They're being like, well, you know, well, if we're going to get like threatened, then we're just going to pull out and not do business. So Secretary of Treasury Saigal Mandelkar says SWIFT, which facilitates the bulk of global cross-border payments, they've already cut off the Iranian central bank and other financial institutions. So Gerard Araud, France's ambassador to the United Nations says, the fact is that the banks are so terrified by the sanctions that they don't want anything to do with Iran. So it means that there's a strong risk that in a few months, really, there will be a shortage of medicine in Iran. And then there's one pharmaceutical importer in Iran. In the article, they speak like anonymously because they don't want to be harassed by authorities. They said that the banking sanctions, they've like made basically European and American clients very uncomfortable. And they're kind of like looking for signals from the Treasury about what banks they can work with without getting in trouble, without there being like penalties. So according to Esfandiar Batmanghelji, who's an expert in sanctions and humanitarian trade with Bourse and Bazaar in London, they say it creates a problem where even when you have a European company that wants to sell to Iran, due to the absence of banks being there, payments can't regularly and reliably be made into Europe. So that person also said that, see, the thing is, I don't know if this is a man or a woman. I'm sorry. Esfandiar it's probably a man. Just one of those Persian names, could go either direction. It's a man. Yeah, I'm going to go. It's a man. That's a male name. Yeah. I'm literally just trying to guess.
The rest of the episode is just you being like, yeah, no.
Just going back and forth for 5 hours until you just have to like pop me because I turned into a balloon. So they added that the Treasury had been slow or even unwilling to issue licenses authorized by Congress for humanitarian reasons. Apparently, according to Nila's article, the licenses allow companies to do business with Iran and other countries that the United States has blacklisted as sponsors of terrorism. So basically, they have to get another, like, form, which, you know, all right. that bureaucracy bullshit of, like, going through the paperwork and be like, okay, so can we use them? And then it's like, okay, well, here's the exception because they need this. And it's, like, too much shit. And these companies are, like, not really... They're not getting it.
Yeah.
I mean, not like they're not getting it, like they don't understand. I mean, like they're literally physically not getting these licenses. And on top of that, that's all, you know, Iran's own economic problems have led to like the decline of the rial. And that means that everything becomes more expensive, including drugs, because for the most part, a lot of them are imported. So one man whose story is told in this article, which I recommend you go read Nula's article. It gets into more detail. One man said that his father's pills used to cost roughly $28 a bottle. And this is converted from the real price in, you know, whatever. But the last time that he bought any, the price had increased to $43. So it's already, for the most part, almost doubled. And that's, in some cases, the lack of medicine is attributed to the patient's, like, stockpiling. So, like, people are starting to be like, oh, fuck, like... I might not ever, in the future, I might have zero chance of even getting this medicine. So I'm going to buy a shit ton, which then causes other people to be like, oh shit, like,
what about me?
Yeah. Like, oh wait, then I need to get some. And then like, there's that person who just didn't hop on the train fast enough and they're fucked basically. So recently there was like almost 200 mental health professionals. They wrote an open letter, about the declining availability of medicines. One of them was Dr. Amir Hossein Jalili, who's a psychiatrist in Tehran. They said in an interview that even some domestically produced medicines that need raw materials from outside of the country have also faced a lot of shortages. And again, that means they just can't import anything with sanctions. Mm-hmm. It basically puts a block on certain things that are needed to make stuff in-house.
Yeah.
So it's like all over the board. There's just inabilities to produce the medicine. This doctor said it was hard to change a patient's medical routine, especially in mental health and chronic illnesses. That means it's very hard to be like, here's the medicine you've been taking for fucking years. Let me bring you this kind of like side medicine that technically is for something else, but could also help with this. But it's not the right medicine you need. It's kind of like a, you know, like a shady.
That's fucked up. You can't fuck with your like. It's not just like a trade-off, you know what I mean? Like,
right.
That's fucking stupid.
You're like, okay, well, technically this isn't for that, but like, it could be treated for that, but really do need your real medicine, but let's just see how this goes because your real medicine isn't available anymore. So, yeah, so they say like that can basically cause problems because it's not from the same chemical family and that could lead to deterioration of the patient's condition. So it's like a whole lot of things. Like an example of that is one woman who had multiple sclerosis. She basically finished her last bottle of medication, which was German, and then she couldn't find any more for a very long time. And she says, now that I'm using Iranian-made medicine, it gives me headaches and impaired vision. The German medicine didn't give me headaches. It increased my concentration, and it didn't impact my eyesight. And, I mean, not to be a hater, but, like, things made in Iran aren't necessarily the best.
Right.
Because they don't have access to certain things. Also, they're cheap. They're made cheaper.
Yeah. They're not going to be the same quality by a long shot.
No, because, you know, it's not a third world country, but it's not a first world country either.
Yeah, and if the medicine wasn't... Second world? I don't know. But, like, if the medicine isn't, like... wasn't founded or created there, they might not even have the right properties to make it again. You know what I mean? Like, there's no... You can't fuck with medicine that way.
No.
But you're putting that in your body, it affects everything.
Yeah, I mean...
Yeah. That's fucked.
Big ass IDK about that. That's not good. So on that note, we're going to take a quick commercial break and then we'll come back and talk about other shit that's falling apart in Iran. And we are back.
Back.
What
were you
going to
say?
During the break, Shireen turned to me and said, that is fucked up. But so basically, with all this is literally why when me and my family go to Iran, we literally bring a suitcase full of like vitamins.
Mm-hmm. We just, do that too when we go to Syria.
You just kind of have to.
Yeah. Well, I guess we're not going anymore, but you know. And we bring peanut butter too. and popcorn because they don't have.
You
those
can get away with that.
We used to.
I thought you couldn't. Well, maybe it's just
for
Iran
for the checked-in bags. We could. We like would just stow away peanut butter and microwavable popcorn. Yeah.
Well, that's the thing. It's like
loved it.
Iran, like Iranian customs or whatever the security of the airport, they're so fucking anal. They'll like rip your entire bag apart.
No. Us too.
Is that crazy?
It's really awful. We've lost so many bags as a family. Like just like completely destroyed. We like bought all new ones and we all got them very like safe and there's like ones with locks and stuff. And then we get them back and like the inside seams are coming apart.
Yeah.
And like they've checked like everything. All the zippers are gone. Mm-hmm. Like it's just... It's disgusting.
Yeah, like there's been one. I remember one time they pulled out. I brought a tripod with me because I think I was like trying to like take photos, but like not have to like hold, you know, whatever. What a tripod is used for. And they like pulled out the tripod case and they're like, "What is this? What is this?" And I was like, "It's a tripod." And they're like, "Open this bag." And I was like, "It's a tripod." They're like, "What is this?" I'm like, "It's a tripod." Like, what do you want from me?
It happened to
Look
me.
Look at it.
They had a similar reaction with my Polaroid camera. They were like, "Why is it so big? What's inside it?" And I'm like, "It's just an old camera, man.
Pills.
Like, it's just a very old camera. I'm sorry." And they were just like, "Well, can it like why do you want it to go to the X-ray machine? Because the film can get ruined if you put it to the X-ray machine." So I like asked them not to, but then I eventually let them do it because they were just like, "We're on my ass," and then the film was fine.
I know. Sometimes you're like, "Fuck."
Yeah, but they were like not having how big it was and how clunky it was. They were like, something must be inside.
I'm it's like, so weird. It's like, no. Like, they always make you remove all your hard drives. And
Just
you're like, what? I just believe in storage?
Yeah.
Like, backup storage? Like, what? No, you're right. I'm a criminal.
Yeah. God. Oh, I just want to take some fucking hipster photos.
Yeah. I just want to be cool and not have to worry about my computer crashing.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh. Okay. Well, anyway, back on what I was talking about. So, sanctions have basically made it very hard for people to get their medicine, and the impending doom of potentially there being no more medicine is kind of looming on people.
Yeah.
So, Mr. Batman Helegji, excuse me, Mr. Batman Gelegdi, I'm probably saying that super wrong, this is the person I could not, if earlier, if you guys remember, I could not figure out if it was a man or a woman. I have decided it's a man. They're an expert.
It usually is, right?
Yeah. Well, they're an expert in sanctions and humanitarian trade with Bourse and Bazaar in London. So it's probably a man because women aren't allowed to have jobs.
No.
They said that the Trump administration could improve the situation by issuing clear guidelines for pharmaceutical cunties. Did I really just
this is
do
not
that?
A great episode for our pronunciation, both of us.
Oh, boy. I did not mean to say cunties. I meant to say countries.
They're very close words.
Well, it's just called cunties. Anyway, they could... the Trump administration could issue clear guidelines for pharmaceutical companies doing business with Iran, but Pompeo hasn't, and... So they say there's nothing to date other than lip service from Pompeo. It's either reflective of infighting in the administration or negligence that's taking place. I think it's both.
Yeah.
I don't think they're like smart enough to know that they have to do something about this.
Yeah. They were like, it'll get fixed eventually. Like, it'll resolve itself.
Yeah. I don't think there's enough self-awareness or just even awareness to be like, oh, there's details we have to look at. Fucking idiots. Anyway, so there's about a 70% slide in the real this year, which has basically prompted a like huge the people like a huge scramble for foreign currency, so they can basically pay for foreign products. And so like one of the big things is tomato paste, because so much Persian food is made with the base of tomato paste, which is like, I literally have never thought about it until I read this the new article from Reuters where I was like, oh, fuck.
That's what all the red stuff is.
Well, that's the thing. I remember, I have like, it's not even like a memory. It's just like, I know when I open my parents' cabinets, they're just like stacks on stacks on stacks of tomato paste. Like they buy the Costco, like wrapped in plastic in the boxes. Mm-hmm. So you like... Guys, fucking tomato paste is what Persians live and die on. When you're born, instead of doing a cross on your head with like ash, they put
tomato paste. It's that's a fact. 100% fact.
For us,
it's hummus.
Yeah. Just a little cross with tomato paste and or hummus in the Middle East. Yeah. That's probably offensive on some level, but whatever.
We're allowed to say it, whatever.
I was born with tomato paste on my head. Just like it's so globby too, just like a glob.
Just like it trickles down.
Yeah. You just put a glob of tomato paste, and I'm like, it's cultural.
Okay. I mean, we should take a photo of yourself with hummus on your head, and I'll take a photo of myself with tomato paste on my head.
Let's do that. We're like, remember that joke we did? It was a great joke, right?
We'll post it, and you guys will be like, you guys need lives. Okay. Yeah. So our producer is shaking her head like, are you guys fucking insane? Yes. Correct. So some shops are actually limiting how much tomato paste people can buy, because like everyone is like basically selling out of it because people are like, oh shit, the tomato paste.
It's gonna be like a black market.
Yeah, so that's what's kind of like. I know a guy who can get you tomato paste. This is not funny. I just thought
it's God's really a... not funny. Yeah, it's just but like, it's just sad.
You need some tomato paste.
Because like, when you say it that way, it's really funny.
Just like the tomato paste mafia. Yeah, my family, we deal heavily in tomato paste.
I'll cover
paste.
You in red. They have like weird ways of saying it.
Okay, I think I'm just delirious. Oh, God. Okay. Anyway, so the government has responded by banning basically all tomato exports. So like they don't want any tomatoes leaving the country because they're like, holy shit, we need all these fucking tomatoes. So they're trying to like limit the economic instability, which is, you know, fueling public protests and criticisms of the government. But it's not working because there's like an industry of like tomatoes being smuggled abroad. So it's like already happening.
Oh my God. Tomatoes. You thought the potato famine was funny. No, tomatoes and potatoes. What's up with them? I just thought of a funny thing that they could say if there was a potato tomato mafia.
Right.
They can add like the keyword can be like, what's your favorite color?
Red. Purple.
No, red is the answer. Then you're like then you know you're gonna get tomatoes from the mafia. Okay, never mind. I'm making up a story.
But there's purple potatoes.
Talking about tomatoes now.
No, you're right. You're right. You're right. You lost me. Yeah. Oh boy, you guys, this is what all the tomato talk has.
Tomatoes. That's really upsetting though, because those are like the basic things you need to make that cuisine and make that food, and you're taking away a big part of that culture if you're not letting them have tomato paste.
And it's not even like it's an expensive thing.
No,
you know?
Not at all.
You get those cans for like literally
there's
50
like
cents.
One ingredient in them is tomatoes.
Just like, paste it out hard. Oh, yeah. It's not like you would be like, oh, it's an expensive spice. No. It's like, no, it's just paste from a tomato.
Yeah.
Or made, not from a tomato, but made out of just a
ground
tomato.
Ground up tomato.
So anyway, people are fucking losing their minds. So it's crazy. So it's like, on one side of the border in Iran, you can go to a shop and there's like two cans of tomato paste over. If you go like 10 minutes over the border to Iraq, you can literally find stores filled with tomato paste. It's wild.
That's weird.
It's Middle East baby. Literally Middle East baby. Yeah. So with also, you know, US has like curbed Iran's oil exports, and it's supposed to get even more crazier in the next month. So some Iranians, they really fear that the country's entering the economic slump that they went through from like 2012 to 2015. Mm-hmm. And 2015 is when Obama did the nuclear deal, so it like helped a lot. So Mehrad Emadi, who's an Iranian economist who heads the energy risk analysis at London's Beta Matrix consultancy, said there is an emerging consensus that the economy will go through a period of austerity similar to that recorded during the Iran-Iraq war. Shit. So that was like a very tough time for Iran.
Yeah.
And my father actually fought in that war.
Whoa.
I don't know how much he did, though, because Iran has that 2-year minimum.
Just like in Assyria,
That you have to go join the army to like...
If you're like a young man.
Mm-hmm. Which you can actually... get away with if your father and mom are divorced, because then if you're a man you have to be like, I have to stay home and be the man of the house. But then if you're the older brother and who you do that, then all your other brothers are fucked.
Oh shit,
that's like currently happening in my family right now.
Oh my god,
my cousin and her son like pulled that move, and then the other son's like, oh, fuck you.
Oh, that sucks.
Mm-hmm.
That does suck.
Which is like really sad, because you like either need to have your parents be from a broken home, or your dad has to die, basically.
That sucks.
It's like, oh, well, my dad passed, but I guess I don't have to go to the military?
Yeah, but then your younger sibling does.
Yeah.
Someone's fucked over it in either scenario.
Look, you know how to really create a rift with your sibling? Make them go to the military instead of you. After your home basically is broken in half.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ. Anyway, so there's also other jumps in prices that are occurring in a range of goods. Mobile phones, cell phones, very hard. It's not easy to just people basically go to other countries and buy iPhones and then bring them back. But when the sanctions were lifted, an Apple store actually opened in Iran. Whoa. Well, actually a few. They were like around, so you could just go and buy it. Yeah. But now I think they can't sell anymore.
Fuck.
Yeah. So like, yeah, other consumer electronic products, milk, of course, has gone up. Like I said, tomato paste, even just the price of tomatoes itself. So you can't even make your own paste. It's like increased more than fivefold compared to last year. Like, wow. This shit is going up. Yeah. So it went from like 60,000 reals to 180,000 reals, which is $1.24 or something like that. But that's still...
It's still, like,
shit
for
ton.
A tomato for a basic item, that's crazy.
That's crazy. But the government, they're trying to stop these shopkeepers from price gouging. Like, they're being like, you need to sell at lower prices. Mm-hmm. But then some shopkeepers are like, fuck you. Like, it's like, I can put this price low, but it's just going to rise again because the sanctions are just going to keep getting worse. I don't know. So... The International Monetary Fund predicted this week that the economy would shrink 1.5% this year and 3.6% in 2019 before recovering slowly. And then how much the current recession resembles past periods of economic pain for Iran will depend on the extent to which Washington can use the sanctions to push other countries into cutting oil and non-oil trade with the Islamic Republic of Iran. Oil is, like I said before, their biggest...
Yeah.
Economy booster. And you know, I feel like we talked about this on last time I talked about sanctions, how they turn off their radars and they like use nondescript boats to continue selling oil, like under the guise of secrecy.
Literal the under the radar.
Yeah, because they
that's whoa. Where it comes from.
Whoa, what? It's just like my head just blows off. Yeah, that is, isn't that.
That's wild.
But that's what they have to do.
Yeah.
Like, they have to be sneaky as fuck, or, like, because everyone's starting to feel the pressure of the U.S.
being like, you have to listen to it.
Like, can you just, like, really, like, absorb how much effect stupid Donald Trump's decisions have on literally, like, an entire population of a country? Like, it's absurd. It's not just him being like, Iran is bad. It's also him being
that's a
like...
good impression.
Thank you. It's also him being like... Like, those words and him retaliating in this way, it's jeopardizing lives of people that have nothing to do with us. America should not have that power, but it does. And it really infuriates me.
Well, that's, like, the most devastating part is, like, I'm watching a country that literally all my family lives in. And I just, I don't know how to take it in. Like, it's so fucked up. And then you have, like... Fucking Mike Pompeo, he like had that thing at the 2018 Iran summit. He said, if their people want to, says that like Iran must listen to the U.S. if their people want to eat.
What the fuck?
Like, why would you say that?
Wait, he tweeted that?
He said it at the,
he said it at the fucking,
the 2018 Iran summit.
You guys, did you really absorb that quote? Like, he's threatening an entire people if they want their people to eat.
That shit legitimately broke. When I read that, like, I was broken.
That's
like, I was
terrifying.
Like, that's my family, you dumb motherfucker. Like, don't you
fuck
threaten
y'all.
Their lives?
I hate the majority of the fucking politicians in power right now. Like, they need to fucking a reality check. Like, they're not gods. If your people want to eat, bow down to me. Like, fuck y'all. Oh, that makes me mad.
Yeah, and they want to be like, well, why doesn't the leader want to sit down with us? It's like, because you're a joke and a piece of shit.
Yeah.
That's why he doesn't want to sit down with you, because he doesn't take you seriously, because you already destroyed everything.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you showed that you were incapable of understanding simple things when you decided to destroy that nuclear deal.
Yeah.
When it was like, but do you remember that nuclear deal? Was like,
that was benefiting the both of us.
Nuclear
weapons. That infuriates me.
No, it's really fucked up. It just drives me crazy.
Yeah, put that Mike Pompeo thing in the footnotes. Idea. That's infuriating.
Did you see the thing that says sanctions in like the Game of Thrones font?
Oh
it
my
really
god!
Fucking feels like that.
Dude, when art mimics life, or whatever they say, right? It's weird.
When in doubt, destroy an entire country.
When in doubt, use Game of Thrones font.
Also, like, just, like, don't help people who have literally nothing to do with you, who have done nothing wrong, that just happen to be born in a country that they live on, like, the government they live under, like...
Like, what control do you have wherever you... Like, you... None of you listening had any control over where you were born.
Yeah.
None of us.
Yeah.
That's not something we can control. There's no... it makes me mad.
I mean, we're just like Shereen and I are just lucky that we're the kids that got to fucking live in America.
We're
like,
the American cousins.
I could easily have been one of the cousins in Iran.
Why do you think I have so much survivor guilt? It's because of it all stems from feeling like I'm lucky but also undeserving.
I know I shouldn't say this on here, but I feel like we need to like have a secret mission where we go and bust our families.
I've already thought about this. Like I've already told you that I want to be the one to assassinate.
I've been watching The Great Escape a lot. Could you imagine? I'm just like
I did watch Prison Break back in the day.
Going,
do I want to tattoo my entire back?
yes. As the map, like, all right, Shereen. And just then the I just get like a shovel, and I'm just like slowly digging a hole to Iran. She's like, pop up into my uncle's house, I'm like, all right, follow me. It's gonna be about 3 years. It's a long hole.
Remember in that children's book, like Journey to the Center of the Earth or something, and that kid just like digs a hole to China or something, or like. Mm-hmm. Maybe that's a very weird summary, but I remember that very distinctly.
I feel like Trump read that book and thinks it's real.
Right. He's like, I'm going to build a wall, too. We'll keep him out.
If we're not paying attention, people just literally drill holes to China and leave. Join China.
Like, he's so stupid.
That's a book, dog. That's a child's book.
He's a child. So, do we have time to read any reviews, you think?
Yeah.
Because I want to read a couple that made me really happy.
Do it.
And I want to give you guys incentive to also write reviews for the potential of you guys being read out loud, also because it helps us. But there is one by the most recent one is by this username Ferdinancer, Firdncer. Sorry, Ferdinancer. the title is White But Down, a reference to our merch, y'all. If you guys want to support us, you can also buy our merch at tpublic.com/ethnicallyambiguous. More on that later, but this review says, Dear Anna and Shereen, I am so sorry that on, quote, We Are Spy Lords, our episode from last week, white women made you feel like you have to apologize for being critical of white feminism. Those are the women that need to accept that we are problematic for people in this country. I am so grateful for your podcast. The stories that you share and the Middle Eastern-centric politics that you cover have opened my eyes and filled me with facts that my fellow white people, when my fellow whites speak on some nonsense. The most recent blowout argument with my husband was about in the ways Lena Dunham is a problem. Thank you. It was the dumbest argument because we were on the same page about her being terrible, but that's just what I'm saying. White people have to speak up to other white people. We are far too concerned. We're far too complacent. Why? I'm just making up words. Just look at what we did in Texas.
Complacent's a word.
No, but like I said, concerned, just out of nowhere. This is we are too complacent, that's what she said. Just look at what we did in Texas. How many white women still vote for horrible, monstrous men? Thank you for the knowledge. Thank you for your critiques. And thank you for sharing your voices, Georgia.
I know, that one made me happy.
It makes me happy. Do you want to read one?
There's
one called Y'all Are Bae that I think is really great.
Hold on, I gotta open my iTunes real quick.
Okay, I'll save that one for you. It's by Taylor Boblier.
Y'all are bae.
Y'all are bae. 5 stars, obviously, no less, please.
Got it. Cool. Wait. Hold on. Y'all are bae. Bye, Taylor. Babala. I don't know if I said that right. I can't stop with y'all. I love your show, who you two are, what you represent, the knowledge and message you share. Sorry, I have to read it like that because I can't read well. Where have you been all my life? So thankful for this podcast for you two, broadcasting perspective, teaching me so much, and sharing your passion and culture. See, I'm sorry. I really struggle to read out loud.
When you were in school, you were like the one that was nervous about being called on.
I just like...
Everything makes sense.
I read fine, but reading out loud, I'm not good at like predicting when a sentence is going to end. Right. So I'm a fool. Love everything you two are doing. Thank you for being a voice to learn from and look up to. Love, Taylor Sword. I almost thought that said Taylor Swift. I was going to be like, oh my God.
Yeah, isn't that nice? It's just that so nice.
Sorry, I can't read.
And there are some shorter reviews that I appreciate just as much. I'm going to just read off of them really quickly. Plops Magoo, a good look into the Middle Eastern experience and their context of news stories is very helpful. Krylica manages to cover important news that 3 actual news podcasts that I listen to managed to ignore. The whole point of us existing. Thank you so much. And Gucci Mommy 1017. Love Anna and Shereen. They keep me informed and lolling.
Nail paint emoji.
Yeah. So.
So us.
I appreciate. We both appreciate all these really great reviews. And tell your friends and family to review us. And also to buy our merch. There's a lot of sales going on because of Thanksgiving and the holidays.
That's new.
Our the newest one was the finger. The white or the the lamp.
I'm with
lamp.
The band.
I'm with the band, the finger. And then the magic lamp,
with the smoke.
Smoke ethically ambiguous podcast coming out of it, very Aladdin-esque. But yeah, I think, I mean, the thing about Tee Public that I like is that any of those designs can be made into so many different things, like a t-shirt, a tank top, a sweater, a hoodie.
A tote.
A tote, a mug, a poster, a sticker, an iPhone case, a laptop case, a pillow? Do you want it on your pillow? I think the lamp would be a cute pillow. Or even the middle finger would be a fun pillow.
Or you can get our eyes and just sleep with us every night.
Yeah. Or the white but down would look great on a white pillow.
Oh.
A white down pillow? No, it's not possible. But
yeah,
but yeah,
they don't make it. But you could you know what you could do? Buy one of their pillows, gut it, put that shit on a down pillow.
Yeah.
White, but it's down.
But it's down.
Comforter.
Yeah. Wordplay, y'all.
So you guys all now owe us money for that idea.
But yeah, thanks, guys.
Also, this is announced. I was going to say they should come to our Arab Spring Break show.
Oh.
Well, you guys are. This happened yesterday when you hear this, but we were both on a show called Arab Spring Break.
And I hope it went well. I'm yeah. very scared.
God, you guys loved it.
Yeah, we did post about it on our Twitter, so hopefully and Instagram and Facebook. So if you guys did look at those, hopefully some of you came out. And if you did, I hope you guys came up to us and said hello. This is also in the past now.
We're just trying to hope someone is like. Yeah. Okay, well, here's hoping.
But for real though, I'm nervous. I haven't done stand up in a couple years.
Are you going to do stand-up?
Yeah, but I'm super scared.
Tell a story.
I'm really scared, though.
Well, I guess it's so funny, because people will, if they know, will have known how it went.
Yeah, if they know that I'm going to bomb already.
You're not going to bomb. Yeah. That's like one of those shows where they're just supportive because you're brown.
Right, exactly.
I think.
Dun-dun-dun.
Yeah, what were we saying?
Very casual editing.
Yes, so, yeah, follow us on all the socials. At Ethnically Ambig on IG, mm-hmm. AMBIG. At Ethnically Amb on Twitter, AMB. I am on Twitter at Anna Hosnia, AnnaHosnieh. I'm always tweeting about some bullshit.
Yeah, you're dominating Twitter. I'm on Twitter as well. I am Shereen Y, Shereen.
Can you guys go follow Shereen so she stops
W-H-Y. Well, maybe they can follow me if I can say my entire handle.
You're right. I'm
just kidding. Shereenwhy. One day it'll be Shiro Hero and match my Instagram. But until then, please follow me on Shereen Y.
Wait, can you remind me why it's not?
Because someone else has it, and they haven't tweeted in like 5 years.
You can't. They just don't respond.
No, and I've begged them to give me their username. But yeah, I need to compete with Anna out here with all her Twitter followers. So follow me, please.
Please follow her so she drops this.
She's just so good at Twitter. I can't even manage it. But I'm on Instagram. I'm Shiro Hero. Shereohero. And yeah,
there you go. You have more Instagram followers than me.
Yeah, but that doesn't count. Because I'm not private.
Okay, goddamn. I was just thinking that would get you off my back.
No, but I really want to thank you guys again for those that write reviews and buy our merch. And
yes.
It really does support the show a lot. So if you have a second to write a really quick or however long you want it to be 5-star review on iTunes, go to your iTunes app or your app on your phone. You can also review us on Facebook if you have an Android and you don't have iTunes. You can like us on Facebook and review us there. 5 stars, no less.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's all I gotta say.
Yeah. You can buy that ass?